Fantastic. Evening, all. Evening. How is everybody? Thank you very much. I'm glad you're fine. That's good to hear. I wanted to start off by telling you about... I need to tell you who I am quickly, don't I? So my name's Mike. I think most of you know who I am. I work for a charity called Insight, which is the Christian schools work in the borough. And I wanted to tell you about one of my lessons recently. I was in a Year 5 lesson in a school in North Kingston talking about Pentecost. Apparently it's Pentecost Sunday. Was it last Sunday? Is that right? Yeah, there you go, okay. But Pentecost was recently in the church calendar, and we were doing a lesson on Pentecost. I'd never been to this classroom before. I'd never seen these children before. And so when I start a new lesson with children that I've never met, I always say to them, I think it's a little bit weird that some adult just walks in and then talks to you for an hour. So let's get to know each other. And I ask them, I say, you've got 60 seconds, have a chat to the people around you, and you can ask me anything you want. Now, it's always a foolish thing to do that, but I always do it. There are some rules, though. The first one is that you've got to make sure that you're fairly sensible with the questions. And the second one is that I have the right to refuse to answer some of the questions, at least. Okay? So, very quickly, what do you think the children ask? Yeah, they ask that. Very good. Okay, I get them to do some maths for that one. No, you normally can't believe how young I am. They always think I'm a lot older, which is upsetting. What else? That's so mean. But yes, I am. Thank you very much. Wow. Oh, I know I shouldn't have asked this question. The kids aren't that harsh. What else do you think they ask? Yes, they're fascinated by that. Yes. Okay. And to be honest, they should know that as well, because in every assembly I do, in every school, I mention Joshua. But anyway, that's another thing. But yes, so they ask about children. They ask if I'm married. They ask who my wife is and how long I've been married. They ask where I live. That is a question that is never answered. One of them, in this lesson though, asked if I was a Christian. And then I explained again that I was a Christian and that I was there to teach them about what Christians believe. And then they changed their question to, why are you a Christian? Now, in that time, you've got about a minute to try and answer these questions, and they fire lots and lots of questions at you. But what would you say if you were asked that question and only had a minute to answer it? How do you become a friend of God? What makes us right with God? Well, I took them to the parable of the Pharisee and the tax collector. This really is an amazing parable that in only five or so verses teaches us much about God's mercy and how we are to come to him, how we can be made right with him. And for me, this passage was the one that led me to pray for forgiveness the first time. Some of you were here, how old am I, 29, 15, 16 years ago when I was baptized. I would have told you this story, and I'm amazed if you can remember it. But the first time I prayed for forgiveness and truly understood the gospel message, I was at home. I was about 14 years old, and I was locked in the bathroom. My parents hadn't locked me in there. I'd locked myself in there. But it's because there was a massive argument going on at home. And that was often the story of my childhood. There were lots of arguments going on. It wasn't a particularly safe or comfortable place to be. And I remember I went to Epsom in your high school, and the Gideons people came round, and they handed out their little red New Testaments. Do you remember them? Yeah? Very good. Okay, I've lost mine. I was going to bring it and show you, because I wrote on permanent marker the day and everything that I prayed this prayer. I've lost it. And it was a real blessing to have that little New Testament given to me. And I don't know why I took it into the bathroom, but I did. And I sat by the bathroom door, and I thought to myself, right, okay, God is meant to be all-knowing and all-powerful and all-good. I've got a bit of a challenge for you, God. If you are all of those things that you say you are, fix this rubbish going on in my life, please. And I opened up the little Gideons, and I looked at the help section, and it took me to the parable of the Pharisee and the tax collector. So I thumbed through the pages. They're quite thin, aren't they? So I probably tore some of them as well. And I had a little read of this passage, and I realized that I was just like the tax collector. I had nothing to offer God. Here I was challenging him, but I had nothing to offer him. I remember being sat there, and I just imagine, I'm very grateful that I'm not God, but if I were God, I would have seen a little boy, or maybe not so little, but a boy sat there, crying his heart out, looking pretty pitiful. I wouldn't really want him in my group. And yet, this parable teaches us that actually the ones that have nothing to offer, the ones that aren't good, the ones that have nothing to bring, are the ones that he welcomes. Why? Because he's a merciful God. And that was the start, really, of my faith journey. God opened my eyes through his word to what he was like. And he is good. So we're going to have a little look at this passage in a bit more detail. In this story, we're going to see two prayers. Just before this passage, Luke shares about the importance of praying persistently. So this whole section is about prayer. He's clearly got it on his mind. And the Pharisee and the tax collector, it shows us how not to pray, but also gives us some guidance on good ways to pray. And Jesus starts off his parable by telling us about the audience. It was to some who were confident of their own righteousness. Now, what does it mean to be confident of your own righteousness? In our Bible clubs this week, we've been doing the parable of the Pharisee and the tax collector, so I've been trying to pinch some ideas from the volunteers that have told the stories of the children. And one of my volunteers told a story like this. They said, imagine that you go to the doctor and you knock on a door, you open the door and you say, hello, doctor, just to let you know, I'm doing really well. I've had my 5 a day. I've done 15 miles running this week. I never smoke. I never drink. My body is a temple. I am good. Can you imagine going to the doctors and doing that? Has anyone ever done that? No. Normally I go to the doctor with normally I open up a text with my wife telling me everything that's wrong with me, and I tell the doctor, don't tell Naomi I said that, please. But it's ridiculous, isn't it? But these are the people that Jesus is talking about, the people that are confident in how good they are. I can imagine them looking in the mirror and going, hey, you're doing fine. You've got this whole life thing sussed. You should be pretty chuffed with me, God. But Jesus continued, not only are they self-righteous, but they look down on everybody else. And I'm sorry that I'm looking down on you now. That isn't the reason. It wasn't just that his audience were really confident in themselves, but that they then use that confidence to belittle everyone around them. Now, I like to live life on the edge, as you can imagine. And at this Pentecost lesson that I mentioned just now, I asked another stupid question. I said to the children, what do you think about me? I've been teaching you for about an hour. You've seen a little bit about what I'm like. What do you think? Now, I'm not going to ask that question because Eric's here and he could be even meaner. But the children, thankfully, I did this lesson back to back. So I did 2 hours worth in 2 different classes. I asked this question in the first class because they were quite a nice class. I did not ask this question in the second class. I read the audience there. But thankfully, in the first class, the children were really, really kind. And they said, well, you're pretty funny. I'm hoping that was a good, kind thing to say. They said that I cared about Jesus, and I was clearly passionate about sharing the stories from the Bible. They said that I was quite kind, and I was quite knowledgeable. That's a pretty good list, isn't it? Yeah? Would you be happy if someone said that about you? Good, wonderful stuff, okay. And it was a really good list. I was really chuffed with that. And I considered asking that question tonight, like I said, but I won't do it just yet. Maybe you can tell me later. But I asked this question, not because I wanted my head to explode, but because I wanted the children to know the truth. What is it that makes us right with God? Is it how we present ourselves to other people? You see, I haven't always come across like that, and I promise you I don't always come across like that. It's only because of the work of God in my life that I can be any of those things. And I explained to the children that as a child, I definitely wasn't like that. In fact, I was quite an aggressive and angry child. thankfully, they found that difficult to believe, which was lovely. But I definitely wasn't that list of things. And how actually, like the tax collector, I had nothing that would impress God. But that isn't what we see at the start of this passage. Jesus talks of 2 men who go to the temple to pray. Now, there's nothing too special about this. The temple was a central place of worship, the kind of place that you would go to pray, a bit like coming to church. The special bit comes in the people that go to the temple. You've got the Pharisee. Not looking over here, sorry. We've got the Pharisee and the tax collector, sorry. Now, many of you will know about Pharisees. They were the religious people of the day, and to be honest, the temple was a good place for them to be. It seems appropriate, doesn't it? They are the ones that everyone else would look at and go, wow, God's got to love you. And to be honest, this Pharisee is pretty amazing. Now, the Pharisee assumed the position of prayer and started off really, really well. He says, God. It's a good place to start a prayer. He even says, thank you, which is a really important thing to say to God. We should be thankful. And then, unfortunately, he carries on. he prays about the bad things that he doesn't do. So, like being like other people, the robbers, the evildoers, the tax collectors, and the good things that he does do. Fasting twice a week, tithing his money, tithing all he gets. I was reading in some commentaries, apparently they'd even tithe herbs. I've no idea why, but that's another thing. And these are all good things. And in fact, this Pharisee goes above and beyond the good things. You see, he was required, by being a Pharisee, to fast and to tithe. But he fasts more than he's meant to, and he tithes more than he's meant to. He fasts twice a week. He is a really, really good guy. On paper, he looks amazing. He's the kind of kid that you want in your class, because they tick off all of the checkboxes that you're looking for. And then we have the tax collector. And you can almost sense the hatred as he walks into the temple. Now, before I say this, is anyone here from Wales today? Good, we're safe. Okay, marvellous. When I was in university in North Wales, we would go to the pub. There wasn't a lot else to do in North Wales, and the library was not the place that we would go. So we'd go to the pub, and I remember one Sunday after church going down for a carvery. And we went down to the pier, and on the corner was this beautiful-looking pub, and we thought we'd get a seat just by the window, and we could look out onto the... What's that bit of water in Wales, in North Wales? The Menai Straits, that's the one, sorry. We could look out onto the straits, and it would be lovely. Beautiful, beautiful lunch. We open a door, and I don't even think our toes went through the doorway before everything went silent. Everybody in there turned around. They stopped drinking their pints, and they just glared at us. I have no idea what we'd done wrong. And we stepped back very, very slowly, and then ran to the pub across the road, which was much nicer. And then when we went back to church in the evening, we asked about this pub, and apparently it was a very local pub, and it was for Welsh people and Welsh people only. And I don't even know how they knew that we weren't Welsh, but they could sense it, and we were not welcome there at all. And this, I imagine, is what it was like for the tax collector. If it was a panto, you can imagine all of the boos going round. This guy wasn't liked. He was Jewish, like the Pharisee, but he was seen to be the lowest of the low. You see, he worked for the enemy. He worked for Rome. And that most likely made him a liar and a thief, at least in everyone else's eyes. Now, Jesus was very careful when he picked the Pharisee and the tax collector. It wasn't a mistake. They were picked to make this message even more shocking and even more amazing. We know that the Pharisees disapproved of Jesus hanging out with what they said were bad people, were sinners. Luke 15 says, "Now the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering round to hear Jesus. But the Pharisees and teachers of the law, well, they muttered, 'This man welcomes sinners and even eats with them.'" In Luke 16, the Pharisees ridiculed Jesus' teaching. And yet, they came to the temple to pray to the God that Jesus was teaching about. And the Pharisee prayed really confidently, but he made a huge mistake. He started with God, but then he continued with himself. He prayed in a spirit of pride. One commentator said that he glances at God, but then contemplates himself. And we can see that in his prayer, can't we? If we have a little look down at the passage, he says, "God, I thank you that I'm not like other people, robbers, evildoers, adulterers, even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week, and I give a tenth of all I get." I'm going to read that again, and this time ask you to do a little bit of maths, okay? Every time you hear the word "I," would you mind just counting up with me? Is that okay? Okay, I like that. You're all looking down at your Bibles now. This is good. Okay, "God, I thank you that I am not like other people, robbers, evildoers, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week and give a tenth of all I get." How many times did you get? Excellent stuff. Different translations may have different amounts, but the point is, it's too many. His heart is in the wrong place. His prayer is all about him. He lists off his achievements. He has no sense of sin. He has no humble dependence on God. Does the Pharisee's prayer make him right with God? We probably know the answer, don't we? But just to be clear, Jesus goes on. The prayer of the Pharisee is the complete opposite to that of the tax collector. the tax collector comes to God in a really humble way. He is aware of his sin. He wouldn't even lift his eyes to heaven, which was a common practice in prayer. He knew that he didn't even deserve to look at God. He beat his breast, which I always thought was a really weird saying, but apparently it's a sign of sorrow. And then he said, "God, have mercy on me, a sinner." 7 words. God, have mercy on me, a sinner. Now, be merciful means to take your anger away. Even as he looks to be forgiven, he's aware of what he deserves. He's aware that his life has offended God. And we need to be so aware of that too. So often people are hard to talk to about God because they aren't aware that anything is wrong, or they won't admit that anything is wrong. And people often disagree with what it is that makes us right with God. I was in a year one lesson not too long ago. And those kids don't hold back at all. They're what, like five or six years old? And one of them put their hands up. I think we were doing it about Easter and about forgiveness and how we can be friends with God. And one of the kids put their hands up and said, "But Mike, my mummy's a really good person. My mummy's really kind. My mummy's really loving. My mummy's really caring. My mummy gives great hugs. And my mummy does charity work. So isn't she going to go to heaven, Mike?" What do you say to that? I can't just say yes, because that wouldn't be the truth. Well, just like Jesus is saying about the Pharisee, being good isn't good enough. And we need to be clear that God is offended at sin. And the impact of that is a broken relationship with God. But God doesn't just say that that's not good enough and leave you there. You see, the joy of the gospel is that God demonstrates his own love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. He died for the tax collector, he died for the Pharisee, and he died for that little girl's mum. That wasn't what I said. You can ask me what I said later. But that's the joy of the gospel. Now, only the tax collector in this story knows God, because he knows that he has nothing to offer God, and God accepts the plea of a humble heart. The tax collector puts himself in a class of his own, but in a very different way to the Pharisee. He has nothing to offer God. This is the plea that God accepts, that of a humble heart. And please don't forget that the tax collector didn't just say, "I'm a sinner. I'm so bad. Oh, no." He didn't just wallow in the bad things that he'd done, but he looked to God in God's mercy and he cried out. He is the one who went home right with God. See, Jesus was very clever here. The phrase "have mercy" also means to be inclined to show favor, and it links back to the idea of the mercy seat and the Ark of the Covenant in the Old Testament. It also links to how Jesus made a way for us to come back to God through his death on the cross. Because of Christ, God forgave us once and for all. The tax collector came to God knowing of this amazing forgiveness. We come to God knowing of this amazing forgiveness. And that relief that we have when we come to God knowing of utter forgiveness, it's often quite a tangible thing, isn't it? I remember being in the bathroom and praying to God to sort everything out, and it was like a weight was lifted off of my shoulders. But that didn't last long. See, life gets in the way, doesn't it? We realize that we continue to do wrong in each and every day, and then somehow that grace and mercy kind of gets pushed aside, and we forget about it, and we try and make it on our own. And I wanted to ask, how do we avoid going from being like the humble tax collector to being like the Pharisee? How do we avoid that? Going from humility to arrogant, self-righteous pride. How do we make sure that we don't present God as a moralistic judge that we can make happy if we just tick off a list of good and right things to do? You see, when you ask the children what makes us right with God, they will list off lots of good things. They'll talk about being a nice friend. They'll talk about sharing. They'll talk about looking after the environment. That's a really big thing for them at the moment. They'll talk about caring for everybody. They'll talk about eating your peas. Anything like that. that makes your parents happy. Well, that's got to be what makes God happy, isn't it? The list will go on and on and on. But the Pharisee, did great things. He wasn't condemned for doing good things, but because his heart wasn't right with God. Lots of people who don't know God yet do great things, but they don't know God because their hearts aren't right with him. Verse 14 says, I tell you that this man, rather than the other, went home justified before God. The tax collector, rather than the Pharisee, went home right before God. For all who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. So how do we avoid becoming like the Pharisee? I've got a few ideas. The first one, have a right view of yourself and a big view of God. Remember that you are a sinner. Christian, you still know that you are not perfect. You still know that you do things wrong. If we're honest with ourselves and we examine our hearts regularly, we will know this. But don't just know it in your heads. Let it humble you in your hearts. And then lift your eyes to God. Remember that he is bigger and better than any trap of sin that we may struggle with. Lift your eyes to the cross and see that precious sight where our Savior stands, dying for us with outstretched hands. Do you remember that song? So we sing it sometimes at Easter. In the song it says, may I never lose the wonder of the cross. May I see it like the first time, standing as a sinner lost, undone by mercy, and left speechless, watching wide-eyed at the cost. May I never lose the wonder of the cross. And I know that we talk about the cross a lot in church. Sometimes people think it's too much. Sometimes people wonder if there's just a little bit more than the cross. No, there doesn't need to be more, because that was the price fully paid so we can be friends with the Creator. How can we be made right with God? By coming to him in humility, by having a right view of ourselves, and by having a big view of him. Second thing, how do we present God to others? Now, this is a really telling sign of our relationship with him. If we come across as judgmental, know-it-all, perfect Christians, as my dad would say, a moral Mike, which I still take offense to, then it's easy for people to get the picture of Christians being just like the Pharisee, and to think that this kind of person is the person that God wants. When we focus on what's wrong in the world, how dreadful everything and everyone is, we're offering no hope. And it's an awful thing when the world seems more forgiving than the church. Don't get me wrong here. We do need to be aware that we live in a sinful world. We know that everything is not as it should be. But we need to bring something different to these people as well. Galatians 6 says, if someone is caught in a sin, you who live by the Spirit, Christian, should restore that person gently. But watch yourselves, or you also may be tempted. We need to be on guard, but we also need to be loving. We need to rebuke, but we also need to restore in the strength and wisdom of Christ. R.T. Kendall, in his book on the parable, says, the Christian is someone who knows he has no right to look down on others because he is what he is only by the grace of God. The Christian is someone who knows he has no right to look down on others because he is what he is only by the grace of God. We have no right to be the Pharisee, and hopefully looking at him tonight, we wouldn't want to be the Pharisee. We have no right to be thankful that we aren't as bad as everyone else. If that is us, then we've missed the point completely. And if that's been your experience of Christianity or of God, I'm sorry. See, we know that when people sin, it's because they're looking for fulfillment. They're looking for something that will give them a sense of purpose, a sense of being, a sense of joy. But it's our joy to show them that fulfillment and true joy and true peace comes only from God. So let us point people to a better way, rather than just telling them no. When the tax collector came to God, he already knew how bad he was. He didn't need the Pharisee telling him that too. Now I know not everyone is willing to admit that they have offended God, But we need to point this out to people gently, and then we need to point them to the rescuer. I wanted to close just by sharing a quick story with you. It's not going to be the one here, so I'm going to close out. When I was in Chester studying to be a teacher, I have no idea how I met this guy, but I met a guy called Paul. They all seem to be called Paul, don't they? I met a guy called Paul, and he worked at a homeless shelter that was linked to a church. And you'd think that the people in this church would be really keen to have the homeless people come in on a Sunday and to hear the good news of the gospel. But Paul told me once, when he was there, that a homeless guy walked in. And he got about halfway down the aisle, and then, I'm not sure if it was one of the elders, but one of the people in the church came up behind him with some Febreze and started spraying. I like these faces. That is the right response. It's a dreadful thing to do, isn't it? And I really hope, I'm sure that wouldn't be our response here. I really hope it wouldn't be. But can you imagine someone coming in to the house of God for the first time, utterly broken, and then having that as their welcome? We are God's representatives on this earth. It's our joy to show them love. It's our joy to show them God. If that person with the Febreze had remembered to come to God in humility, had remembered that they need to examine their own hearts as well regularly, then I don't think that would have happened. And so tonight, it's quite easy, isn't it, to finish the message and then to go home and then to start ironing and packing your bag and doing whatever you need to do for the morning. Tonight I wanted to give you a few minutes to have a little think about this message, to have a think about the Pharisee and the tax collector and how we come to God. Have a think this week about how you've shown God in this world. Take this time to examine your hearts. Pray that he will make you humble. That's a scary prayer to pray, because he will do it. But pray it, because it's a good prayer to pray. We're going to listen to a little song whilst we do that, just so there's not 4 minutes of awkward silence. And the song echoes the message about God's great mercy for us, about how we can come to God, about how sinful we are, but about how great God is. And never forget that second bit, okay? Never just wallow in that sin, please, because that will destroy you. But always look to the great Saviour that we have. We're going to take a few minutes just to listen to this song. Do pray, and then I'll come up and tell you what's going to happen next.